Hello and welcome to the As Yet Unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 27th of November 2011. My name's TRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Gareth James and Phil from the West End Whingers. Okay, we're going to talk now about Juno and the Paycock. This is a play by Sean O'Casey, written in 1924, and it's set in the working class tenement in Dublin during the Irish Civil War. This is actually done very contemporaneously to the actual events. The Irish Civil War. This is where the people who accepted the treaty with Britain to set up the Irish Free State fought against the people who didn't. The play concerns the Boyle family, Juno Boyle, the matriarch, and her husband, the captain, and also the Paycock, or Peacock of the title. They have a son and a daughter, Mary, who is a seamstress on strike, and her son, Johnny, who lost his arm in the War of Independence, which is slightly earlier, in the sort of 1919-1920, fighting for the IRA, or a predecessor of the IRA. That's that is essentially the setup. They Captain Jack Boyle is a Yorkshire layabout, really. Not even sure if he ever actually went to sea. I think he sort of was on a boat for a while, and it seems to be suggested. They're told that a distant relative has died, and that he has left a large fortune to his first cousin, who happens to be Jack Boyle. And they get a lot of money in, they get a lot of things on tick, they get a lot of credit, and oddly enough, they not good at this. They get a lot of things on credit, and and unfortunately, it doesn't all work out in the end. Lots of things go wrong. So, Gareth, what did you think of this play, this production?
Well, I've seen the play before, and I remember it as being less of a comedy and much more having a bit more edge, really. I think the problem with the play is it's uneven, because the first half, which is the longer half, is actually really just a kind of black comedy about family life in tenement Dublin. And really, he holds all his punches until the second half, when the backdrop, the kind of backdrop of civil war and the labour disputes and so on, actually comes to the fore. And to me, he's left it too late. So I think it's the unevenness of the play that's difficult for me. But though I have to say, the second half I enjoyed significantly more than the first half. The first half, the comedy is also, in this production, I think, overplayed. Almost cartoonish at times, and I don't think that's what O'Casey intended, and I don't think it serves his play well. I think that's a shame that Howard Davis pushed it a bit too far, really.
Yeah, I didn't feel the connection with it in the first half. Certainly, the connection between Juno and her husband particularly well, perhaps because they were, kind of wanting the laughs and not in doing enough. And also, lots of people have mentioned Bob Crowley's set, which is magnificent, but it perhaps shouldn't be magnificent, because it looks like they are living in a very down at heel stately home rather than in a tenement. And you almost wish it had been they'd somehow found a way of getting it constricted and making it much more smaller and intense, because I think that's what it needed to be. Certainly we have one or two of my contributors to the podcast that didn't turn up for the second half, which is a worry. Oh yeah, I mean, it's often the case they would have worried about it. Now, Phil, did you turn up for the second half?
Yeah, surprisingly we did. And I agree with everything you said up to a point. The first scene is, I thought, incredibly dull, and I did know the play because I did it for A-level, although I couldn't remember that much about the plot, because nothing really happens. There's a lot of setting up. Yes, there's a lot of comedy, but actually I thought it was made better from, because when I read it at school, I found it quite dull. I liked the way the comedy was done. It took me quite a while to engage with it, though. It wasn't really till the second scene of things begin to happen, and it is before the interval that you find out about the potential inheritance. And that's when there's actually some plot to sort of get your teeth into. And after the interval, it would be a shame not to come back, because a lot happens after the interval. Things go tits up in quite an extreme way. It's just one thing after another. By then, I was engaging with the characters. I thought Kieran Hines, if I pronounce it correctly, was very good. I liked the fact that he was, you know, this absolutely terrible sort of layabout, work-shy figure. I thought Johnny Boyle, the son, was very good, and particularly good the way that they did the fact that he lost an arm. We had quite a lot of discussion about that, how the clothes were very well fitted to make it quite convincing. So, yeah, I think returning for this one for the second act would be a mistake. But I think you get a whiff of that before the interval when you have the big scene where they start splashing their money around, or their so-called money around. Again, like Irish plays, I think you just think, oh, God, are they all going to sing? They all get up and do their party piece, and you just think, just get on with it. We've been here long enough. I can understand people not going back for the interval, but I think in this case it's a big mistake. And I didn't feel it was overplayed. I thought it actually needed that to inject some sort of life into it. My biggest criticism of the night was Sinead Cusack's wig, which I just thought was the most unconvincing wig I've seen on a stage in a long, long time. And I think she battled against that quite gamely.
I agree with your point, Tim, about the set. What he's done is he's kind of created a kind of squat in an abandoned stately home, really, and it reminded me in a way of the set for The Veil that it's sharing the stage with, as if that set had been abandoned, they'd come and put the play into that set, really. And I think the problem with that is it robs the play of this intensity of tenement life. And if you remember, I don't know if you saw Men Should Weep on the same stage, which was in a Glasgow tenement, they actually created that tenement life brilliantly on that stage by having small rooms, yet still having a big setting, really. So even though I thought the design itself was a brilliant piece of design, it didn't serve the play. I think that's very true. And as far as the performances are concerned, I'd also pick up that Ristard Cooper, who creates this joxer mate, of the lead character, I think was absolutely terrific, because he kind he captured this kind of, you know, the fact he's a chancer and a bit of a parasite, but he does it with a sort of charm and a swagger that means that, you know, you can't help liking, really. But for me, the reason for going to see this show and for staying after the interval is that it is actually a really, really good set of performances. And I actually thought Sinead Cusack, despite the wig, was actually very, very good as well. And I think the performances, for me, made the evening worth the visit.
I agree completely about the performances, especially about Ristard Cooper. He was fantastic. And again, I agree about the set. Yes, it looks lovely. It's, you know, huge, splendid, decaying squalor, but it's far too spacious. It's just not cramped enough. I always imagined them, and I've seen it before, in a much more cramped space. And there's an awful lot at the beginning of clumping across the stage, which is quite noisy, because they've got huge distances to travel. And you just feel that they should be living on top of each other, not having all this space around them. But it's very attractive to look at.
Yeah.
But wrong.
I'd like to talk now about the news that... two bits of news. One is the news that the Mousetrap is going on tour. I think it's a touring version of the Mousetrap, and they're not actually sort of taking it out of its home in St. Martin's. And also one or two people saying, well, you know, shouldn't the Mousetrap be closing now? What do you think, Phil?
Well, should it be closing? I don't know. We went to see it last year, and even though I unfortunately knew who did it, because Stephen Fry gave it away on TV, which I thought was a bit ungame of him, I was surprised how much I enjoyed it. I thought it was great fun, and I think, yes, it's a tourist attraction sort of play, but it actually works quite well. I would love to have seen it, not knowing, you know, who did it. And I think it's quite interesting as a piece of social history, because it's quite fun. There's a lot of laughs in the first act. Yes, it is spoiling the fact you can't go to the St. Martin's Theatre, which I was very impressed by. I think it's a lovely little place, and it's worth going to see it, I think, just to go inside the theatre. The tour is quite unusual. The venues that it's playing, it sounds to me like they've chosen the wrong places, because it's playing huge places like the Milton Keynes Theatre and Manchester Opera House. all of which normally stage musicals, Southampton, Mayflower, Bradford, Alhambra. It needs to be in a, you know, small theatres like places like the Theatre or Brighton. I don't understand why they're doing it like this, because I think it will be, just won't work, but who knows, maybe it will.
Yeah, I keep missing the opportunity to go to the Mousetrap, mainly because I don't particularly want to go on my own. Gareth, you have seen it. I believe you were completing a list of theatres at the time, weren't you?
Well, I realised one day that it was the only London theatre I hadn't been into, so I thought, well, I better go then. I did actually enjoy it. I didn't know who did it, so I won't do a Stephen Fry. I thought it was just, it was a pleasant enough evening in the theatre, but hardly groundbreaking. I think it will do well on tour because it's got 60 years of hype, but I agree with Phil that it is in big theatres where it probably won't work. So I can understand why they've done it commercially, but I think it's a mistake artistically, really. I desperately wanted to close for one simple reason, and that's that it opened the year I was born, and it keeps bloody reminding me how old I am. So it has to close as far as I'm concerned with that one.
Yes, there's a full-page advert in the Sunday Times Culture magazine today, and it's yes, it has the age in big diamond anniversary letters. Sorry, I just told everybody your age. But
yeah. Next year, Phil, not this year, next year.
Yeah, okay.
Well, well, no expected birthday card.
Even so, it's a big one. It's quite funny because there was a thing, I think in Baz's column, Baz Bamigwa in the Daily Mail on Friday about it, and there was a show, Rainbow, the Judy Garland play with Tracy Bennett last year, which gave away the ending. I thought it was rather ungame to give away the ending in the show, and apparently the people behind the Mousetrap had a word with them and they dropped it, which I think is quite right, because the kind of people who would go and see that show might go and see the Mousetrap, and it's why spoil it? I mean, that's part of the fun, not knowing and trying to work it out. Yep. So I think that's quite interesting that they did change it.
You can follow the podcast at AYULTP on Twitter, on Facebook, the as-yet-unnamed London Theatre podcast page, and on the web, ayu-londontheatre.org. Thank you. Goodbye.